This is the Agile Uprising Podcast.
All right, greetings. Welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. This one being brought to you live on the videos. So I am this evening's Master of Ceremonies, Jay Hursko, and joined with me going around the room, based upon my view, I have Paul Elia. Say hi, Paul.
Hello.
Andy Clef. Troy Lightfoot. Reverend Troy Lightfoot. Jason Cusack. Yeah. And Colleen. Hello.
Hello.
All right, and the topic for this evening's discussion is Agile certifications, specifically around renewals. All of us who have been working professionally know that there's a lot of professional certifications out there. So we wanted to talk tonight about the worth of an actual certification, as well as what is the actual value, if at all, for renewing your certification year over year. We have had a previous conversation podcast about this in the past. I think it's one of our earlier episodes titled Agile Certifications. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But this is a new conversation because we want to talk about this. We want to talk about certifications as well as renewals. So with that, so let's begin. So first things first, I want to go around the horn. Starting with you, Colleen, what certifications, if any, do you currently hold, and are they active? Have you actively renewed them, or have you just let them go?
Oh, it's like confessions.
Right?
I had a CSM. That was from 2008, maybe. I never renewed it. But I do still list it, probably as most of us do. And then I have an active KCP, which is a Kanban certified professional, and an active AKT, which is an accredited Kanban trainer, which don't require renewals.
Okay, Jason?
I have a CSPO from 2008 that I think it's renewed with my CSP. Renewed my CSP last year. Interested to share that story with this group. It was one of the reasons why I wanted to be on this podcast. And I also have my SAFE 4.0.
Is a SBC, Jason?
SBC, yeah.
SBC.
Yeah, and I just renewed that in January, if Dean's watching.
Troy?
Where do you want me to start, Jay?
alphabetically?
I have CSM, CSPO, CSP, PSM1, PSM2, SPS, PMI, ACP. There's a bunch of them. ACI Agile, Coaching Agile Teams, Agile Facilitator. I think there's like a lot. SAFE SBC 4.5. I might be missing. I don't know. I don't even, the truth is I stopped keeping track and I stopped keeping track about renewal dates. So I don't even know.
All right. I do want to come back to if you're one of those pretentious assholes that puts all those things in your email signature, but we'll put a pin in that and come back to that later.
I don't even have an email signature.
It just says Troy. Andy Clef?
I have half of what Troy has. CSPO, CSM, CSP, and then the two from IC Agile, facilitator and coach. And I don't think the IC Agile's come up for renewal, and the one that I just renewed is CSP at the end of last year.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going on Kuzak's word that it covers CSPO and CSM, so I get a three for there. If that's not true,
scrub it. Should if it doesn't.
I'll owe you some bucks.
Buy one, get one renewal.
Last but not least, Paul.
LinkedIn says 8, so I must have let some things drop off. These are all current, but one has a bullseye on it. So I have CSM, CSPO, CSP, PMI, ACP, PMP, which is the one that has a bullseye on it, SAFE Agilist, and then Pragmatic Marketing, And product portfolio management. I dropped the name from that, but that's Pragmatic.
Okay. And I have my essay as well, and I have my CSM. So I'm looking here. I actually took a count. We have a pretty decent cross-section. I mean, well, Troy being the outlier. It seems like we have four CSPOs, four CSPs, five CSMs, a couple of SAs, a couple of SPCs, and then the IC Agile stuff, and two PMI ACPs. So we have a pretty interesting cross-section here. And then Colleen's Kanban stuff. So we have a really healthy representation of all the stuff that's out there. So let's start.
Was Paul our only PMP?
Paul is, yeah.
Cool. Okay. Be interesting feedback there.
Yeah,
too.
But that's the. It's time to let that damn thing expire.
And I have to say, I'm actually jealous of Colleen. I need those Kanban certs. You got to tell me how you got those.
Troy's treating certifications like Pokemon.
He's missing the letter K.
So. Pokey certs.
We'll trade you.
So let's start with almost a vanilla question, right? Like, what is the intention? Why do certifications exist in the first place? I mean, is there an intention? Are we saying that with the certification you are smarter or more educated than someone else, or is it what some of us a little bit more wise ass snarky people would say? Is it really it's just a revenue stream for a certifying body? I'm gonna go around and start with Andy. What are your thoughts, Andy? What do these things exist in the first place?
Wow, tough question. For me, as the consumer of the cert, it was the process of learning. In early stages, it felt a little bit like a badge of honor that I could share and help get to the next level in my career. But ultimately, they just became markers in my travel of knowledge that I had begin to understand. I don't think they're endpoints or anything. They're beginning points for me.
Paul, thoughts?
Different answers for different periods. I mean, you know, I've got certs that long ago expired. I did have Windows 3.0 GUI certification once upon a time and you know, stuff like that. My latest batch is really, if I'm authentic about it, I had come off my second or third small business, and to reinsert myself back into the matrix, if you will, get back into corporate America, I felt like the certs were a way to say, hey, I have actually been keeping up with this stuff. I'm one of you, right? So for me, it was a tool. At this point, I go for the education. I go for the networking. Some of these I'm going to let expire, but you know, maybe they'll stay on my LinkedIn profile a little longer. Somebody else said that earlier, either pre-show or during the show. I can't remember. But it means different things, I think, at different points in a people's a person's career, their journey.
It's a good point. Good point, Colleen.
Yeah, I think we're all giving some flavor of the consultant answer here, that it depends. I think for me, the AKT, the accredited Kanban trainer one, for me was revenue, right? It was being able to sell certifications for other folks and pass that knowledge along in a really kind of pre-formatted way where you know it's consistent and you're delivering the same message consistently. Although I would say the KCP one for me was slightly different because there's only, I think, 80 of us worldwide. It was hard to get. You had to write a case study, you had to do an interview. And to me, that one was a huge badge of honor to receive because it wasn't a super common cert and still isn't super common. So I think it depends on what the certification is that we're talking about.
Now you've made Troy want it all the more.
Troy, what you don't see off screen is Troy has another laptop up and he's Googling away.
Troy's like, there's about to be 81, Colleen. 81.
Jason, what do you think?
I think the answer is both. I mean, for me, it was about continuing education in the beginning. Like when I got my CSPO, I didn't really know how to be a product owner. I didn't really know the content. I think there's goodness in having beginners or folks that are trying something for the first time go through the activity of sitting in a class and working with other people. But beyond that, when you look at like the CSP, that to me is really more of a, you know, how many conferences did you go to? Did you tick the box on all these different things? And then some, you know, invisible certifying body reads your paper or doesn't read your paper or whatever the submission form is. So that one was less interesting to me because it wasn't about really continuing education. It was really more about a tick the box type mentality. I will say that for SAFE, from my vantage point, I had to go get it because it was a client requirement. But that said, there was a lot of content there, and I got a lot out of that class, and I didn't think I would. I kind of went into it, I think, with I won't call it ego, but I went into it thinking that I've got this all figured out, and the second I opened myself to just learning, there was a lot of interesting stuff there that they pack into that five-day agenda. So but the reason it's both is because all the value of all those certs to me, are they really worth a collective $9,000, $10,000, whatever I paid for it? I don't know, right? Like, I feel like if it was really about continuing education, could you offer the CSPO for a lot cheaper? I think the answer is yes, right? So, you know, I think that there's absolutely a money-making component to it.
Yeah, I agree, but I want to pick up on the CSP. Maybe we took it at different points in our career. For me, my recollection is I put in a lot of time to study, self-paced learning, doing some of the courses, and then also going to some of the accrediting bodies' events. So to me, that was not going to a class for 2 days and paying for it, but it was earned learning. I'm interested how you see it as being less valuable, Mr. Kuzak.
Well, because I could do that on my own, Andy. Like, I do that every week. I don't get certified for it, though. Right? Like the point is that information that I filled out went to the ether of the Scrum Alliance, and some mindless person, or faceless person, I guess you should say, not mindless, but some faceless person then went through it, and then suddenly someday in the future, my accreditation showed up in the Scrum Alliance website. Right. There was no feedback. There was no like, hey, that was an interesting take you had. What about going down this other path? Have you considered these things? Like, there just wasn't that interaction. Right. And if you're going to talk about, you know, collaboration and these certifying bodies, you know, providing value, to me, that would have been a great opportunity to say, let's look at this application and let's have a quick conversation about some of these things and see if we could point this person in maybe a couple alternate directions. So that they could continue that journey on their own, since it's, to your point, self-paced learning. Didn't get as much value from it as I would from sitting in a classroom and interacting with people and talking to someone as opposed to just filling out an application.
Yeah, that unpacks it. I see your point of view. It was more transactional.
Yeah.
Troy, thoughts?
What's the question, guys? I feel like I'm...
he's working on his...
he's trying to find another one. Yeah. It was
Troy just got certified during the show. Got another one.
It was what is the casus belli, I guess, casus belli for certification even existing in the first place? Is it really to denote qualification, or is it almost a cash grab for an organization?
I think for most of them, it's for HR departments to figure out how to hire people. I mean, that's what the certification part is for. I think it helps them. At least they think it helps them. The value, though, to me is the ongoing learning, like you guys have been talking about. Every certification I have, I've learned something by getting it. So as long as I've learned something, I can't say, you know, there's no value, right? And particularly, I've been working on my CST for a little while, about, it's going on 2 years almost now, actually, when I think about it. And that, I don't even know if I'll ever get that certification, but working on getting it has benefited my career greatly, I would say. I've become a much better trainer by doing it over and over again. So that was in different public settings, not at a client site, right? Just random people don't know who they are. Got a lot of experience that. and it's actually helped me become a much better trainer at client sites, right? So that's a good one. I would say the best ones that I've been to, though, are the IC Agile ones. Yeah, for sure. There's an IC Agile cert that I got that literally made me learn about myself. So less about the material and more about how to improve myself, which was the best, like, pretty much I could ask for. And then there's one that I have a friend who's going for, this expert in Agile coaching. But that one seems really cool because you have to, it's a constant feedback process. So you have to record yourself coaching people. You have to get permission. You have to record videos of yourself coaching and facilitating. They give you feedback. There's like a, so that sounds like something that I would like to go for in the future. Yeah.
Thank you. My take is, I think there's a big difference when it comes to certifications, to not to single Paul out, but there's a difference between the PMP and what that came from versus the Agile plethora of certs, right? When you only had a PMP, right? When you were a project manager, you went through PMI, you took a course, you qualified to take that exam, everybody took the same exam. And when you were a PMP, right, you were basically a blessed project manager. There was only really one certifying body. There was really only one certification you could get. So anybody who's anybody that's hiring a project manager, they would want to see those three letters at the end of your resume. Whereas the way the Agile landscape is, it's way different, where Troy could show up, drop CSM off his resume, and everybody would go, well, what the hell is this? Right? Because there's almost so much out there, and actually there's so much competition that I honestly think that it almost muddies the water a bit. Because think about an HR person who's not experienced in how Agile works. They're going to see a couple of our resumes, and maybe they think Troy is automatically the most talented. I'm not saying he is or he isn't. That's another conversation for a board meeting after a couple of beers. But maybe if that's what someone puts value at, they'll say, oh, well, this guy's taken a bazillion courses. Maybe he's the most valuable. Or Colleen has stuff that's really obscure. Maybe she's the most valuable. Or they look at me and are like, Jesus, this guy's, he's definitely talking a good game. Because my God, he's got like three letters and they sound made up. So I think there was almost something lost with the competition that comes with it, because it almost makes the pond even bigger. So you have a couple of big fish, but if you have a bunch of big fish in a big pond, well, you know, you sort of, you're all fighting over the same body of water.
The other risk we run into with that, like what you're talking about with the how many there are to choose from, one of the things I feel like I've run into more and more is there's a lot of people with the certs that have never practiced the role or practiced the job. And I think that's the other part that's really hard about a lot of these. You know, like Troy said, it becomes almost a check the box from a hiring perspective of, do you have a CSPO or a CSM? But less about the experience of actually working with a team and working with people and changing people's mind and changing people's behavior. And how do you certify somebody in that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and this is not a defense of PMP, but you made the point that, you know, there was a period of time where it was the body that also came with work requirements. And if you were audited, which I happen to have been one of the people that were, you had to prove that those hours were true and go get people to attest that you worked together and blah, blah, blah. Versus some of the other ones like the CSM, it's 2 days, stay awake, take a 36 question multiple choice test, you should pass, right? I mean, and it's not that you didn't learn that stuff in that moment, but let's face it, I mean, it's classroom teaching. How much of that is going to stay with you if you don't put it into practice? And what did you really learn from that? That was the beginning of your journey if you're authentic about it. But it is looked at by HR. Somebody mentioned HR. It makes it easier for companies to hire when they see a particular cert. But that particular one, I don't know if they know the difference between that and the 80 people that have the Kanban cert that Colleen has, right?
Good point. Good point. How many of you, show of hands, how many of you have seen a resume come across your desk as someone asking you, should we hire this person? And when you look, they have a certification and no experience in that actual role.
Absolutely.
It's terrifying, right? And then trying to explain to your point, Paul, trying to explain to somebody, yeah, they took the CSM course and so have I. But that doesn't necessarily mean they've been a scrum master. It just means they sat through a course for 2 days. And I mean, at its base level, they sat through a course of 2 days and they took a test. They're educated, but that doesn't mean they're efficient or effective.
Yeah, are there other...
Go ahead.
So keep going in that path, right? CSM, you go CSP, we talked a little bit about, and then higher level certs came out, CTC, CEC, all these other. Are they more exclusive in the same way that a couple of one that Colleen mentioned, that there is less than 100 people who receive it, so that the criteria for achieving it are more difficult? Are those more meaningful as a certification path?
I don't know. Anybody thoughts?
Definitely more meaningful. I think they are harder to get, but there are rumors of it being in a certain geography a little easier than another geography that already has a couple of people with that cert.
Jason, you were about to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say if you looked at the application for the CEC, which I've looked at. I think part of it for me is that it's expensive, right? And it's expensive to, and there's no guarantee that you even get it, right? But one of the things that they ask for is we want to have client testimonials. So if I have a lot of good friends at work who are willing to put themselves out there and say that I did all those things, and then I pay that money, I could still have someone come back and tell me, sorry, that wasn't good enough for me. Right. That to me is what denigrates the value of that cert, because there is no guarantee you get it, because it's a subjective evaluation. Right. So, you know, I don't know how many people have it. I mean, I saw there was something on LinkedIn that was looking at all those certs, and by comparison, maybe Ryan was the one that put it out there on our Slack channel, but it was something like 40,000 CSMs and then like 200 CECs. Certified enterprise coaches.
Okay.
Right. So I mean, it is a much smaller number. I don't think it's as exclusive as what Colleen does, but I also don't know how many people look at that application and are like, hey, sign me up to, you know, go dig up a 14-page submission on my coaching experience. Right.
Troy, you were going to say something?
It's 400,000 CSMs.
It is. That's correct.
Yeah. And if I remember, I think it was on the coalition, the drop from CSM to CSP, which I think is the next one, was exponential, right? Wasn't it like 400,000 down to like 7?
It's 1%. I think it's 1%.
And they just changed that, right? Made it much more difficult, the CSP, if I recall?
I'm not sure about that one.
Troy got that like 10 years ago.
So I will say this, though, Jay, about SAFE. At least the SPC test is not easy. Like, you actually have to know what you're...
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay. If you were an agilist before you took that, I don't think it's that hard, but...
Okay. That's true. I mean, I mean agile experience to pass it. That is true.
No, I would almost disagree with Paul, because I think I knew my shit, and walking into that exam, I was like, whoa, because SAFE is... They pull from all sorts of weird corners.
That you have to learn, but... I'm not saying it's a cakewalk of an exam, but it's still go to the class, learn it, and take the test.
Are we talking about the SAT or the SA?
Yeah, and Paul, remember, our experience with SA is way different than what Troy and Jason did. Their class is way more involved and way more difficult.
Right. Do they require an exam? No joke.
Yeah, I didn't learn how to become somebody else that trains.
What were you saying, Colleen?
Does SAFE require that you retake the exam to renew that?
Uh-uh. I don't know. Jason, no, Troy?
No.
Just a one time?
I think when they come out with 5.0, though, Jason,
yeah, everybody retests.
Yeah, yeah. Let me restate that, because this is what happens. When you get certified to do SPC 4 and 4.5 comes out, if there are additions to the classes, like one of them was a Scrum Master class, you had to go take that test in addition, right? So beyond your SPC 4 certification, then there was additional tests that you had to pass in order to teach that course. So I think it's, you know, a collective of 6 classes that were different between 4 and 4.5. So I had to take all those tests. And if I didn't pass those tests, then I was going to have to pay to take them again. And if I didn't pass them, I couldn't teach the courses.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's the distinction to being, you're right. Jay, we are SAs.
Yeah.
We didn't go the extra distance to be able to teach other people to get their certs.
So one of the questions that we had on our loose agenda was, why do you want a certification? What are your objectives? And I think if I remember everybody's answers, some of it was career driven, some of it was client driven, some of it was Mark, Andy and Paul both used the term markers in my travel. So it showed where I was going through. We had client, we had career driven. We had Troy brought up about it's the experience and the educational aspect of it. So the letters are just a byproduct of going into these courses and learning. So I don't think we need to cover off that. But now let's get to the meat of it, right? Let's talk about renewals. So what's in it for me to have my CSM renewed? Because I'll be completely honest here, probably kill myself here. I've never renewed any of mine. I never renewed my CSM when it aged off. My SA just aged off. I never renewed it. I've still got it on my LinkedIn resume. I still technically passed the course. So I technically was certified. I let it lapse. I don't see the need. But what convince me, why would I want to renew? Why would I want to renew a certificate?
Well, not a CSM. I mean that in all seriousness. It's watered down. It's 500,000 people 2-day cert.
Or a CSPO.
That's all. Yeah. That's close, right?
Now, right. So those are better. You just practice, right? You just practice right. for years, and then you demonstrate your capabilities that way. Re-upping those entry level certs, I can't find a reason.
No.
To pay the fee, take the test, even if it was free. Test?
And that was going to be my next question along those same lines. Almost all these recertifications charge a fee, right? So what is the motivation for, I paid once, I took the course, I passed the class for, you know, by hook or by crook, but now I got to pay again to recertify? Is it, that's where the whole argument of you get a couple of nihilists in the room and they start saying it's a plain old cash grab. That's where their argument starts to actually hold a little bit of water, I think. Because then it almost becomes almost blatantly like, what more do you want from me? I got to chip in another $300.
I mean, it is a cash grab. Let's be serious. It's a cash grab, but the people who get them, there can be benefits, right? I think it's both. That's my opinion.
Jason, well, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I did the CSP just for pride, right? I renewed my certification, went through the submission, sent that over. I have no idea if he even approved it, right? But it cost me $250 to do that. So I was running through my head like, well, what does that money go toward? Is that for the person at the other end of the transaction that then has to go review it? And how many people are in that same boat, right? That are just blindly sending money to the Scrum Alliance in this example, right? To get nothing back, right? Like I would feel better if there was, like I'll give you an example on the Safe side. With Safe, they'll say, hey, look, here's access to a whole bunch more material, right? Like if I renewed my CSPO and they said, here's some new things that maybe you haven't considered or didn't know about, or here's what's going on in the product owner space, here's a different way to do prioritization, here's some other mechanism for you to get better at things, then it would make sense to me. But the fact that it's really just taking letters and making sure that the Scrum Alliance says that it's current, right? That to me is not a value add on the research side.
Right.
One thing I wanted to pull up here. We just talked about like the CSM. Paul just talked about the CSM example has become diluted, right? Are there roles in the Agile world where a current or a you've had it once, a certification is necessary but not really sufficient? Where having that cert is necessary to get to do this role, however, it's not really sufficient to prepare you for the role itself.
CSM, by all means, right? We all threw our hands up because we've seen applications of someone who said, yep, I took it a couple of months ago and I'm ready to be a Scrum Master. And you put them in live fire and it usually doesn't go well.
And I've never done any of the ECI certs, but from what I've heard, and I'd love to hear you know, for from Troy and Andy, your take on this. But I think that's what really sets those apart from the folks that have taken it that I've talked to, that it teaches you facilitation and, you know, kind of the psychology behind dealing with groupthink and group decision making and changing people's minds. And I think, the, you know, a lot of the other certs we're talking about are process, right? It's do you know the process? Can you memorize the process? Can you pass a test on a process? But at the end of the day, there's people involved in all of this. And that's where you see so many folks with certs that can't facilitate interaction with a team and with the people side of it. And that's, to me, that's the missing link between a lot of the programs.
Troy, so, Troy's pretty close. Yeah. You just finished up a 3-day Agile.
So yeah, I had taken the coaching Agile teams previously, and then I most recently took the Agile team facilitator from ACI. Both awesome. I got a lot out of both of them. I would say the Agile team facilitator, I got a lot more practical things, like as a facilitator to do in workshops or meetings and how to teach other people, like good facilitation. So that was beneficial for me. But the coaching Agile teams one, that was actually a bit like, this might sound funny, but in a way it was kind of transformational for me in a way. So I really learned a lot about myself, where assumptions I was making about even myself and coaching were wrong in some areas, I would say. So I don't know what more you can ask for about that. So for instance, like an example, they teach you stuff like how to actually do some, start doing professional coaching and not just consulting. How to, give you another example, how to work with people who are resistant to change, how to, stuff like edge theory, stuff like, you know, integral theory. They go over different types of ways of working at an organizational level, at a team level. And really, they teach you stuff like, what are them looking for? Conflict resolution, how to facilitate conflict resolution on a team and individuals, really stuff like way beyond stuff like Scrum Alliance Search and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, those workshops are so beautifully designed to give you some theory, practice, take you meta, dissect it, learn from the experience. I'm reminded of an early Aikido teacher. So, you know, we'd start, we'd be training and somebody new would come and say, you know, what books can you recommend? Because I really want to learn this martial art more deeply. And she would just laugh and they'd keep asking, no, give me some books, Sensei. Point me some books. She's like, you can't learn to play the piano without the piano. And I think the CSM is teaching you, and CSPO to a large degree is piano lessons without a live instrument. Agile is you've got hands on, you're playing, and people are then are critiquing how you did that arpeggio.
I have this image of Jason walking into his Krav Maga class and his instructor handing him the empty toilet paper tube and saying, "Kill me with this." And that's like that's how you know you'll graduate it, if you can find a way to actually kill the guy with the toilet paper tube.
Jay, real quick, I'll give you one real thing. So now that we're talking about certifications, right? So you tell me if you think there's value in this, okay? So I went to that coaching. It was put on by the Agile Coaching Institute. The instructors were awesome. Some of the best trainers I've ever had. They did pair. It was beautiful. So what I learned there was, I tend to have a very empirical process way of looking at the world, right? Which is nothing wrong with that, okay? And as Agilists, that's what we tend to gravitate towards anyway, right? But what I learned was it's hindering some of my ability to be effective, because I see the world a little bit through, if something can't be proved empirically, then it's not true, right?
So you're Spock.
What's that?
You're Dr. Spock.
Right. So, and that has to do with my upbringing. That has to do with just like personal values and stuff like that, right? So I bring a lot of them into work, which tends to work as an Agilist, right? Because it's a lot about empiricism, right? The problem is the people you're coaching, their perspectives are not necessarily, like, I might not think what they think is true, because I can't, they can't prove it to me empirically, right? But the thing I really got out of that class was that I have to respect their truth, and it's the only way I can actually coach them effectively, right? So it sounds simple saying it, but when we went through that class, I really had to sit there, and like the second morning I woke up and I said, like, this is what I get out of it, that everyone's truth is valuable, and just because somebody can't prove it empirically doesn't mean that it's not true to them, and doesn't, and if I really want to be effective, I need to meet them where they're at. So that's, and so that approach to coaching, I really got out of that class. So if I didn't go for that certification class, I probably wouldn't have had that mindset switch. So,
and I think what's cool about that, Troy, is like being able to talk about the growth there, like for you personally. And when I think about like maybe what could be lacking from a lot of these renewal programs, it's that, right, of proving that you've grown. So is the difference between SPC 4 and SPC 4.5 that they've added new ways of calculating weighted shortest job first? Or is it proving that you've grown as a coach and a facilitator? And I think, right. I think there would be more of an investment in going through the process of getting a renewal if you had to show some kind of professional and personal growth as a coach and a trainer, in the way that you just described. And it was less of in the last year, and can I check the right boxes to prove I read that? Are there any, I mean, for the certs that everybody said that they had, are there any where you feel like the renewal process challenges that or forces you to show some growth?
Not me.
No.
Jason?
No.
But Troy brought it up, so I wanted to talk about this a bit. We've had, you know, Agile Coaching Institute, we've had Lisa Atkins on. She's a wonderful guest. Her books are great. She's Agile Coaching Institute, which is now owned by Accenture, right? So does that potentially change the whole concept of a certification in the Agile world? Doesn't this almost give, because ACI is pretty well respected, right, as far as the landscape goes. Does that almost, could that potentially have a bad impact to the view of those certifications themselves, where we look at it's almost like an Accenture product? And that hasn't happened, but I'm just speculating here. Is there a potential? I mean, is anybody, I don't know if we can get around to talk about it. I'm sure there's NDAs, but do we run the risk of maybe commercializing it to the point where almost irrelevance, I guess?
I hope not. I think it's a risk. I think their reputation, the quality of the training is pretty strong. But, you know, I do think, you know, I gave the Spock eyebrow, I think, when I heard the news. Right. You want, I mean, it's like McDonald's buying the FDA on some respects, right? I mean, what's going to happen?
But, good point.
The quality hasn't gone down. Troy, you just took a class.
It's the same trainer, same material.
Yeah,
it's holding up.
There's a note here in the agenda, and I think, Jason, you added this one, so I'm going to pivot to you, about Ari Van Beneckham and his quote, where he talked about how should certifying bodies actually be nonprofits, and should they exist for the furthering of the craft itself? Was that you?
Yeah. Yeah. That, and I pulled that from the manifesto co-author review, right? I was listening to, re-listening to the series on my way to work the last couple of weeks, and I came across Ari's, and they were talking about certifications, and that was one of the things that he brought up in his interview. And I was thinking through it, and, you know, I think that would be a great model. Like, if it was truly about furthering the craft and truly about furthering education of people, then why wouldn't that be a nonprofit, right? Why wouldn't you just have enough to make sure that you could stay afloat and truly further the education? Because that takes away all the other stuff that we've been talking about, right, in the form of, you know, your CSM. Does it cost $1,100? Does it cost $800? Is it $2,000? Is it some other abstract cost? Did you get a group discount? Right? It takes all that away if it's truly about furthering the craft, in which case those certifying bodies probably should be in that spot where they're trying to further the craft and not necessarily monetize it. Because now you have to wonder if they're truly there to monetize it, you know, what is the end state, right? How many certs are you going to need? Even in Troy's case, because one of the questions I have for you, Troy, is it sounds like your one class you took was awesome. Would you pay $3,000 to have that cert renewed if all it was a cashing of a check for you, right? I mean, because from a recertification perspective, that's the question. What is the recert worth?
Yeah, probably not.
But I would pay $3,000 or $5,000 to get to the next level of that understanding and that effectiveness, which would be, I don't know, the Integral Agile course or something like that, or whatever next level that the ACI is offering. But to recertify on the existing stuff, no, I don't see any value in that.
I'm going to say something crazy, and this is not meant to say that ACI is this group. And Hersko, it's escaping me right now, but it was the religious cult that started with Dianetics. What was that called?
Scientology.
Scientology. Right? Mm-hmm. Wasn't Scientology, I mean, again, I'm not an expert on this, and this is by no means to say that ACI is a group of Scientologists. However, if we said that on the Scientology side.
The emails come back. Jesus.
No, but what you just said, Andy, was you said that if it was, you would pay to get the next level of learning. Where does that stop? Right? Like, because someone is going to be listening to this and they're going to be like, oh, dude, I'm selling Andy Clef every certification I can because that dude's willing to pay for anything as long as it gets him to another level. Right? That reeks of what the Scientology model is, which is you have to donate millions of dollars to finally get, quote, enlightened. Right? And does that ever really happen? Right. Why wouldn't they just do it for the good of the craft and just to do it because it's the right thing to do to help educate people and create a body of other folks that can help also promote that craft? Like, why isn't that good enough?
It's an interesting argument. So we graduated high school. We went to college. Some of us went to postgraduate, postdoc stuff. I view that progression in a similar way. Learning more at a higher level is different for me than recertification, right? I'm not going to every year pay my undergraduate more money to keep my diploma, which is some of these bodies are doing, but I might go back for a master's or a PhD or an MBA. Well, not anymore, but That's how I view something with the value of what ACI offers.
Okay.
Closer to enlightenment? I don't know.
Well, I think that's a fair point. I really like your analogy, too, of the college diploma. I mean, they try to get you to pay for it again. You're probably on the mailing list. I know I am, too. Right?
My donation is nowhere close to the original nut.
No, but I mean, but that's a good analogy, though, to kind of wrap that segment, if you will, of, you know, no, colleges aren't coming back and saying, in order for you to keep your degree, you have to give us another 10 grand, right? And then we'll make sure your certificate stays active, if you will, right? To me, these things should be, if they're truly meant to further an education point, they should be there forever, right? There should be no recertification. There should be no reproving that you went to conferences. There should be none of that stuff, unless there was a value add, unless it was taking you to a different level. Right, and maybe that's the argument as a community we need to start making to some of these certifying bodies.
So there's somebody put something on the agenda that I want to touch on. It's a form that's as a question, and it says, is it possible that certifications are more helpful earlier in your career, or perhaps during a pivot period, but later in your career, it's really more about knowledge and networking. Colleen, what are your thoughts on that statement?
Well, I think it depends on what your end goal is. I mean, just listening to all of us talk through this, I am more interested in the ACI stuff for where I'm at in my career, because that sounds like something that I would get a lot out of. And I've been in this space now for 10 years. So I think it depends on what your goals are as a coach and where you're at. And, you know, I think the other piece of that is an interesting way to look at what you're getting out of it or what you want from it is, are you embedded or are you a consultant? Because as a consultant, our goals in maybe having an enterprise coach, you know, a certified enterprise coach, might be more important to our ability to sell into the executive level, where internally, as an embedded, you know, embedded with an organization, things like the ACI skills might be more beneficial. So I think that that career path also kind of changes what's more important to you from a growth perspective, whether it's the beginning or, you know, 10 years in.
Paul?
Well, I actually wrote that. And
damn, I should have went to him last.
So one of the things that I think certs can do too is take somebody who's a little further in their career, like my hair might show, sort of devalue the life experience that you can bring to the table and make you appear as a commodity. That was one of the things I wanted to throw out there, is that, you know, early when you're still building your earning power, the certs can boost you. Or if you're trying to take a career pivot and get into something slightly different, and it doesn't have to be agile certs that we're talking about. I'm really more in DevOps right now, and thank goodness the cert world hasn't crushed DevOps yet. Hopefully won't. But after a certain point, you know, when the recruiters call me and they see my certs, I can't take the pay cut that they're talking about. I didn't get the certs for that.
So I'm assuming there was another bullet there talking about how do certifications lower your perceived market value, right? Because someone thinks that you have a CSM, well, the market will pay X versus Y, where maybe right, you have right. way more experience than that.
So the recruiters know that CSMs get X, Y, Z, and it's like, I see you have a CSM. Would you like to take this job in Detroit for half your pay or whatever? Yeah.
And get shot at. Yeah, whatever.
So that's what I kind of meant by that bullet, is that early in your career, while you're still building your earning power, these certs could probably help you. But at some point, I do think you have to see, why are you doing it? It's not about the earning potential anymore.
What are your thoughts, Andy Clef?
I want to second what Carl said. At some point, it's useful as a consultant. It's almost the entry level requirements. So if you want to coach at the executive level, you're probably not going to get a foot in the door without a CEC, unless you're internal and you've earned the reputation, right? And you've earned the rights and the support of people at that executive level. So at certain points in your career, certain certs, I think, give you that access that you might need. It's not going to get you the second gig in the place unless you deliver, but it might get you that first gig.
Get you in the door. Jason, thoughts?
Yeah, I think you guys have given a great rounded view of that. I tend to think it's really more about, at least at my stage of my career, more about the networking. Like, I'll be honest, I even go to conferences and look at attending certain events to see who's going to be there, right? And in our Slack channel, we're always looking to see, hey, where's Jason Little at? You know, that he's a guy I really like listening to. He's a guy that I would like to learn some stuff from. If Jason Little had the Jason Little cert, would I go get it? Probably, if only because I'd want to support, you know, a colleague and someone that I respect, right? So for me, it's less about, I do continuous learning all the time. You guys help educate me on all kinds of crazy stuff on our Slack channel. So it's less about that for me and far more about the networking.
Mm-hmm. About the networking and the learning. It's not about the certificate for you.
That's correct.
Right?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think we could all agree that networking
Go on, Andy. It's the networking and it's the learning at our stage where we're at. I think in the early days, if we can roll the clock back however many years, we might have had a very different perspective. For me, you know, that first cert was about improving my career and my earning power. At right. this point, it's more about improving knowledge. My understanding, my knowledge, and my networking, right. and learning from people like Jason Little or Lisa Adkins, who really have some powerful stuff to share with this world.
Troy?
I would say for me, are we just wrapping it up? Is that what we're doing?
No, there's one more question after this we'll wrap with.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you know that the ACI coaching model where they have the bottom, they have the business mastery, technical mastery, and transformation mastery. Right? Mm-hmm. So that transformation mastery side, and that I find, at least on coaching at a team level and a program level, that's like the hardest experience to get. I'm just kind of throwing it out there with you guys, right? So portfolio leadership, executive leadership level for the transformation stuff, right? That kind of stuff, I'm like, hey, this is stuff I'm really interested in because I think this is how we're going to make a real change in our organization. So the way I'm looking at it is like, what classes, what books, how can I get better at this? Because the experience is a little hard to come by, right? At the high levels, okay? So how can I prepare myself so when I do maybe get some opportunities, I'll be ready? That's kind of like a part of my mindset when it comes to that, the leadership. And I'm not talking about frontline managers. I'm talking about senior leadership, executive mm-hmm. coaching, stuff like that, right? Sure. So any certs that will help me get there, I'm like, yeah, I'm all about it, right? So that's stuff like I was mentioning earlier, the ORSC cert, which is a professional coaching cert, which like if you want to be an executive coach, that kind of stuff goes a long way. You know? So I guess my point is there's value in it in the sense of if it's helping you learn and it's helping you grow as a person, that's that way I look at it. I mean, I don't really care about the actual certification. I just like learning stuff. So yeah.
That's all. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Last question before we do wrap with final thoughts is how would you do certs and recertifications differently? So if it was up to you, if you had the wand, how would you make it valuable to not only gain a certification but actually gain the recertification? And I'm gonna start with Troy. You spoke last. You go first.
Okay. How would I change it?
How would you change it? How would you make it worthwhile so that it's not just I paid and I took a course. I went for 2 days. I passed a test. Or I'm paying to renew. How would Troy make it to show that this certification is truly valuable and it's denoting what I want to, what I set out to do by giving you these 3, 4, 9 letters?
So I think in order to maintain it, you would have to prove some way of growth. That could be through like an ongoing learning cohort. That could be through, you know, maybe writing in what you've learned and sharing some things. Maybe you have to record yourself doing some kind of training. I don't know, right? It's anything but just pay $200. Okay. That would be number one. I don't know if I have all the answers for it, but I would say that's probably a good part there. And I would say make the entry level certs a little bit harder.
Fair enough. Andy Clef?
I want more of a feedback loop. Like Kuzak said, you know, just paying $200 or $300 to get your CSP with no feedback leaves me lacking. If someone says, you know, I see you reading this line of books and watching, you know, this group of videos, have you thought about this part? Right? Let's have a conversation. Let's make it collaborative. And let's give you some feedback from somebody who's a couple of steps on the path ahead of me that can offer me perspective that I can't get on my own. That would make it more valuable to me.
Cool. Colleen?
Yeah, I almost picture it similar to, you know, what everybody's saying here is like a mentor program of, you know, here's you checked these boxes and passed this initial exam to get to the next level. What we need from you is that practical experience and evidence of putting this to use. And I think a lot of that has to come from a relationship building with somebody who's at that next level above you. And that's something that feels like it's also missing from a lot of these programs is it's like, again, like Cusack said, you submit your application and you say, yes, here's my fee. And I checked all these boxes to move to the next level. But how do we know that, you know, that has helped you grow and pushed you to the next level to have that cert? And You know, Andy, you said that about the feedback. One of the things I thought was the most interesting about that, the KCP process, it's a after your white paper goes in, there's a panel interview with other KCPs that are selected randomly. One of the things I valued the most about going through that process was at the end of it, they sat and all gave me feedback on what they liked and didn't like about my answers to the questions. They said, you passed, but here's all the stuff that we think you got wrong or the areas that we think you still need to work on, which I thought was amazing. It wasn't just a green light, red light. It was so valuable to sit with peers and have them say, here's some areas where, you know, you're passing, but here's areas that you really need to focus your energy on going forward to be better at this. And I thought that was super cool.
Let me jump back in because I'm reminded of the dojo model one more time, where when you get your next belt, your teacher says, congratulations, you've got your black belt, right? This is not the end of the trail. It's the beginning of a new path. And not only does the teacher give you some feedback, like Colleen says, you know, you're going to pass, but you screwed up all this stuff. You need to practice that. But you also have an obligation to train the people two steps behind you. Right. And there's none of that in the certification process.
Good point.
You know, all of us had said, we want to learn more because clearly one of our values are continuous learning and some mastery. But I think we haven't, I've seen it in all our practices, how we share through the coalition our learning with people who are new or younger or challenged. But I wonder if that could be part of the recertification process. You know, are we helping to bring the next generation along?
Yeah, that's a good point. Almost combining Colleen's remark about how you should have a mentor who you're working with. But in order for you to advance, you not only should have a mentor, you should also be tasked with bringing the next generation. Like you said, you should be tasked with taking on someone younger than you and being helping them advance, you know. And we talk about servant leadership, right? And you're judged not by your successes, but by the successes of your team. Maybe we do some, you know, where we can prove that I have transcended the next level because I've brought these five people up a whole other level themselves.
But I see Kuzak's gears going back to the Scientology model.
Yeah, right.
You ain't getting to heaven unless you're in converts with
me. We turn the Agile Uprising OT level 7 Phaeton cert, right? nice segue. Jason, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Andy, I'm harking back to you called it the dojo model. I mean, for some of the Krav Maga testing I've done, it starts at the beginning, right? Like, even the highest level practitioners in our school go test with all the people that are at their first level test. And then those people get dismissed, and then you move on. Then the entire group moves on to the second level, right? And the reason for that is because they want to make sure that from a basics perspective that you haven't lost anything. That if they are certifying you as a high-level practitioner, that you can do all the stuff that you learned, whether it's 6 months ago or 4 years ago, right? And I think that there's an element of that that really needs to be kind of worked into the recertification process, which is, you know, how are you staying on top of all the different education credentials that you should be, right? Like, just because you read Reinertsen's book, you know, 20 years ago, doesn't make you a stellar product owner now, because that space has evolved and changed, right? 100 different ways, and certainly for the betterment. So how can we certify that you have stayed on top of that? I really like the idea of kind of the paired model of you mentoring someone and someone mentoring you, and having that step ladder that you kind of carry. And certainly those relationships could change, but they should be longstanding, in my opinion. I think that would do a lot for the research process.
And last but not least, Mr. Paul.
Ultimately, there's an alien at the top of all these certification pyramids.
From an intergalactic DC-9 buried in a volcano somewhere?
I really don't know much about Scientology.
I know too much.
I'd like the vision that has been painted of like the dojo, like bringing up the younger, or, you know, let's say the less experienced in whatever the discipline is. I don't see any of the certs that I hold holding that thought. Frankly, I don't see any of the certs that I hold being worth renewing. especially after this conversation. I'm like firmly clear on that. But I'd like to have one. I don't know where it comes from. It really has to be kind of an open source certification type of a thing where you're not out for the money. It's not about certs and shirts and stuff like that. It's really about advancing whatever it is you're committed to and taking it to the next level. Some of the certs that I hold, I would argue that the body hasn't really changed much in quite some time. The knowledge and materials have not changed much in quite some time. Maybe it's time for something like that. I don't know where it comes from.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for we're just about hitting an hour. So real quickly to wrap it up, I'll start with you, Colleen. Any appearances, conferences, anything you want to plug?
I'm going to have a baby. So. Very close to popping out a baby. I will be Woo-hoo. Certified mother three. Mom three.
M-O-M.
There's no test for that, though.
Zero appearances until the fall. There's no test. There's no prep. There's no studying.
Now you got me thinking, what would a recertification for that look like? I don't know. Jason, anything?
No. Mervin and I are talking about maybe doing something for Agile DC together. That'll be fun. And we're collectively still doing our first book club for Uprising. So we'll see how that goes. We'll report back some progress on one of these channels.
Awesome. Troy?
Well, I'm trying to do a talk locally, so if we end up doing an Agile Uprising meetup, I'm sure we'll promote that. I have a talk that's all about making intangible things tangible and trying to build high-performance teams through that. So I'm excited about that. So if you want to interact with me or anybody else, please join the coalition. And I'm on there at least once a day. I check it for sure.
All right, Andy Clef.
I'm going to have a busy month of May. On the 11th, I'll be in New York City at Big Apple Scrum Day presenting. And then in a couple of weeks later, 2 weeks later, when is it? The 21st, 22nd, Mile High Agile 2018. Also giving a talk there.
Nice. Mr. Paul?
I'm not sure when this information will be published, but DevOps Days Atlanta, SunTrust, company I work for now, is a sponsor. If this airs much later, October 22nd is my next big thing, is DevOps Enterprise Summit in Vegas this year.
Vegas. That should be fun.
Sounds like fun, Paul.
Yeah.
I hate Vegas. I wish it was fun.
Yeah, but Ryan will be out there. So,
I know. He loves Vegas as much as I do.
Yeah, good thing he's not on this podcast. We don't have another 40 friggin' minutes to talk about all the places he's appearing at. My God. The guy needs his own personal
assistant.
He's speaking
at DevOps Days Atlanta next week.
If it starts with DevOps, Ryan's probably there. Who does your tattoos? Wasn't that the question somebody gave him at the last conference? He went on for 40 minutes about DevSecOps, and the first question from the audience is, who does your artwork? Yeah. All right, well, thank you, everybody, for joining us this evening. At this point, I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in again. If you like what you heard, please give us a review on iTunes. You can find us on all the normal places. We're all over the coalition.agileuprising.com. We are on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on, I think we're on Facebook as well, for however long that still exists. We are on LinkedIn. So once again, thank you very much, and we hope you enjoyed the episode.